I hate aphasia. It robbed me of my husband, our life, and every interaction. My client Mary said this to me after a particularly stressful day when communicating just wasn't working with her husband. He was insisting on telling me something, but I couldn't understand his words or what he was pointing at. He was just so upset with me. I was heartbroken that even using all the tools and strategies we had, we just couldn't find a middle ground. This is an example of aphasia stress and the emotional and psychological burden for Mary and her husband. Stroke not only alters the course of one's physical health, but also brings profound emotional challenges, especially for those facing the additional hurdle of aphasia. Emotional regulation emerges as a key player in navigating these tumultuous waters, influencing life participation and psychological well-being, and ultimately paving the path to a recovery that's defined on a personal level.
Welcome to the Listen for Life podcast with Genevieve Richardson. Genevieve is a speech-language pathologist rehabilitating adults with communication challenges after a stroke or due to a neurological impairment. Get equipped with knowledge from experts in the field and professionals you need to know. We'll hear stories and experiences from others who are navigating life with aphasia. So, put your earphones in and take a walk outside. This isn't just a podcast. This is a community, a resource, and a support system. We're in this together. Do life.
Welcome to the Listen for Life Aphasia podcast, where today we're setting the stage for an incredibly insightful exploration into the lives of those navigating the challenges of aphasia. I'm your host, Genevieve from Life Speech Pathology. And in this episode, we delve into the heart of emotional resilience and recovery. This episode was inspired by the work of Dr. Molly Manning and her colleagues in their study titled Regulating Emotional Responses to Aphasia to Reengage in Life. Perfect title, right? So we're going to jump into her research as we uncover the emotional odyssey that accompanies aphasia. This research tells us what many of our families already know. There's highs and lows, there's struggles, and there's wins, there's triumphs faced by individuals with post-stroke aphasia. Her research emphasizes the critical role of emotional regulation in moving beyond the initial upheaval towards re-engaging with life and rediscovering a sense of normalcy. We'll jump into this research that reveals the diverse emotional experiences, coping mechanisms, and the journey towards finding balance and participation in life. Let me tell you about Tom. Tom was an executive, known to his friends and family as the man in the room. He was larger than life, outgoing. He was skilled at motivating others and bringing people together, both at the office and at home with friends and family. This larger-than-life man became a shadow of himself when an unknown heart condition abruptly changed his life and identity. Although he returned from the hospital with just slight weakness on the right side of his body, he had difficulty finding his words, pulling his thoughts together, and expressing himself. He felt he was only a shell of his former self. One day he explained to me how he hid away from friends and family and avoided work for the first year after his stroke. He explained that he could have gone back to work. Physically, he was back to driving. He was doing chores around the house, but he didn't feel ready. He did not want to put himself in front of others and, as he explained, make a fool of himself. His boss was extremely supportive and welcomed him back. It was a year and a half after his stroke. So what Tom hid away was his shame. He was clearly ashamed of how he struggled to find his words and how he really couldn't keep up at the time with normal paced conversations. He actually avoided intimacy and connection with his wife for nearly 3 years because he didn't feel worthy of her love and acceptance. But that's not how she felt. She was more than happy to accept him for who he was, because what was most important to her was that he survived and that he was talking and that he was there to be a part of hers and their children's lives. Tom, he beat himself up every day because he had aphasia. He felt his aphasia took him away from the man he believed himself to be. This emotional and psychological stress he carried every day prevented him from engaging and connecting with others. Once he came to realize how he was feeling and putting into words, then we put strategies and accountability methods and processes into place, not only for home, to build his relationship with his wife and build his confidence, but how he interacted with peers and subordinates at work. We helped him put into perspective that sometimes with aphasia, it's not all negative. We can still celebrate wins. We can rejoice that he is alive, that he is here for a reason, and he can still participate in life, return to work, be intimate with his spouse, and live the life he wants to live. It took us a while, but he figured out that by taking the time to celebrate the wins, whether they are just small wins that added up or larger wins, that they did add up and helped propel him forward and keep him moving forward. He actually went back to using a gratitude jar. He and his wife, he explained, used to do this when their kids were small, you know, as a way of teaching the kids about celebrating the good parts of the day and not dwelling on the bad. So what he started doing is when he would come home from work, he kept the gratitude jar and little scraps of paper and a pen on the entry table, and he would just write something in, read it back to himself, put it in the jar, and let it go. So this is a journey. Aphasia is a journey from emotional turmoil to learning ways of managing emotions and engaging with the world in new ways. So let's understand a little bit more about the emotional impact of aphasia. Dr. Manning followed 14 couples, and she came up with the following highlights. And none of this is going to surprise you, for those of you who are living with aphasia. But here's the words to help explain what you're feeling. So the first thing she found was emotional upheaval. This isn't just about the day-to-day frustrations. It goes deeper. It's how this change in communication ripples through the whole family. And it's about acknowledging the emotions related to that upheaval. The second part is regulating emotional upheaval. So she went on to figure out ways, how could people deal with this emotional roller coaster? And the couples that she worked with found that with the support of friends, really confiding and working with their rehabilitation staff, helped them find their footing again. They talked about and celebrated small steps in how they gained confidence and how they had to take small forward steps every day to build a positive feeling and engage in other interactions, other opportunities out in the community. Getting out of the house sometimes is just the first step. Taking that step off the front porch to the driveway into the car with the intention of going out to pick up a sandwich. For so many of these families that I work with aphasia, they want to hide away, just like Tom did. They want to hide in the house. They don't want to go out. They decline invitations. They let things just kind of fall where they may and don't interact with the world. But what Dr. Manning found is that you need to find little islands of calm and take steps forwards, even in the middle of a storm. The third thing she found was there are discerning possibilities for life participation. Quote, and then there's adapting, or as the study puts it, discerning possibilities for life participation. And that's just a fancy way of saying we have to help our folks with aphasia. And whether or not you're working with someone, you yourself and your family need to find new ways of finding joy, of ways of joining in life, discovering new hobbies, and redefining meaningful engagements. So let's go back to Tom. Tom and I, we looked first at the home environment, because often if your home environment is stable and you have confidence in it, then when someone like Tom is returning back to work, we can help him to find inroads at work, find small ways for him to start making changes. But he needs that home environment, that home foundation to be solid first. So we talked a lot about and put into place ways of him advocating for himself, whether it was taking a break or just sitting with his wife on the couch and holding her hand while they were watching a show and taking the pressure off of always having to talk. He felt that there were just some days he didn't want to rehash the day. He didn't want to talk about what he did in speech therapy that day. He didn't want to talk about things that happened at the office. He just wanted to connect with his wife. So he found ways to express that to her and to acknowledge how he was feeling so that he could keep moving forward. So with Tom, we practiced and built on his successes. He became empowered and confided in his wife and how he was feeling on the days he felt like sharing. He also told her for the first time the shame he felt about having aphasia and how he pulled away from her because he was embarrassed. And he felt like less of a man because he wasn't who she had married. She put all of his fears aside. God love her. She really dove into the conversation with him and provided reassurance that she was more than happy to have him as he was, you know, warts and green skin and scales and all, right? As if he were like a troll. She said it was more important for her to have him in her life, there functioning as her husband, and that the word finding, which was really kind of at a mild level, did not matter to her whatsoever. So over time, he came to trust what she said because she proved it day after day that he was worthy of her love. And this is just one example of what Dr. Manning's study found, that it's so important to have the support of your family and others. With practice and building on successes, Tom became empowered and confided in his wife how he had been feeling the shame and embarrassment. And with this acknowledgement, they were able to build their connection back. It was a huge step for him to be vulnerable with his wife. And yet this turned into being his greatest strength. And that allowed them to work as a team, and he no longer felt alone. Dr. Manning's work highlights how crucial it is to have the support on this journey, whether it's professional help or just exploring new activities that bring joy, but also connecting with those that are most meaningful in your life. Let's talk about some action steps for care partners. Embrace empathy. Empathy is huge. Understanding and acknowledging the emotional roller coaster that comes with aphasia is key. For the care partner, try to put yourself in your loved one's shoes. It's more than just about understanding words. It's about understanding how the person who is struggling to communicate, what they must be experiencing, how it must feel to have this struggle, to not be able to express exactly what it is you want to say. And maybe they have an additional component of frustration when others don't wait for them or they guess what their meaning or what their intention is. Some effective communication strategies could be think visually, whether it's with writing words down, gestures, talking about a topic in context of that topic. I've given the example before. If you're in the bathroom with your spouse and you're brushing teeth, and this is for a spouse who has aphasia, you're in there brushing your teeth, don't pivot to what do you want to eat for dinner tonight, because that message could get lost. It's not in the context. A way to work around this would be, honey, I was thinking about dinner tonight. Pause. I was thinking of making lasagna. Pause. How does that sound for you? Pause. Wait for his or her response. Does that make sense? If you're not in the context of what it is you're talking about, you need to help the person with aphasia make that transition. Give them that segue and then pause, because what we do know about aphasia is that processing time, just like a computer, sometimes needs just an extra half second, extra second. That's why the pause is so important. Let's keep going. Let's talk about action steps for the person with aphasia. You need to be positive. When you beat yourself up every time a word doesn't come out or you don't express yourself, when you drop your head, turn away, curl in on yourself, say negative things about yourself, all of that does not help you move forward. We have to turn it around. Breathing. If you're stuck on a word, you can't get your thought out, breathe. Simple. Doesn't cost you any money. That breath, it helps us reconnect. It helps us get centered and grounded. And that extra oxygen to your brain can often help you come up with that word or find a way. So what we need the listener to do in that circumstance is to be patient. They need to wait and not interrupt. Interruption in the way of giving a cue, first sound cue, first letter cue, like, or guessing what it is they want to say, those interruptions really are detrimental to the person with aphasia. Think of it that they are processing and you throw in a word at them and now they have to shift their attention to your word to decide if that is what they wanted to say or not, completely eliminates what it was they wanted to say in the first place. The person with aphasia needs to learn how to adapt. Life is different now, and that's okay. Yes, things are different. So part of working in therapy with a speech pathologist, especially one that has been trained and understands the life participation approach, a big part of therapy is dealing with identity. How do we reconcile who we were before aphasia and who we are now with aphasia? Finding positive ways, finding things to look forward to, making connections. And some of this has to happen with the help of a professional. And it doesn't always have to be with a speech pathologist, although we are, you know, in the communication business, but maybe you have a counselor that you work with, just like counselors and psychologists would help you make step-by-step adjustments to keep moving forward. That's what we can do in therapy to help a person with aphasia reconcile their identity and who they want to be. Who they want to be now that they have aphasia is just as important as reconciling who they were before. and it needs to be woven in and integrated within the therapy process. So let's pivot and speak about the subtle signs of aphasia stress in those who have aphasia. Increased irritability, withdrawing from social situations, changes in sleep pattern, staying asleep, falling asleep, or excessive sleeping, decreased interest in previously enjoyed activities or being with people that they would normally want to be around with. So what are some solutions? Number one, you have to recognize subtle signs of aphasia stress. And if that is your loved one with aphasia and they are showing these signs, it would be worth having a simple conversation and acknowledging, honey, I see that you're sleeping more. You're more irritable. Can you tell me what's going on? Can you draw a picture and show me what you're feeling? Or maybe you get on the internet and you pull up feeling pictures so that they can help express that feeling. Because sometimes it's just a matter of getting that out so that they can cope with it. Does that make sense? If they can't find the words and it's just stewing around over and over and they don't get it out, it's hard to deal with it, right? Sometimes adding relaxation time in. That sounds funny, right? Like, I know personally, as an individual, I should have more relaxation time. And it is a challenge to integrate that into a busy life. But what could be some ways to relax? Sitting in a comfortable chair and putting on nice music for a couple of songs. You don't have to make an hour-long commitment, but maybe it's just 10 minutes. Maybe it's two songs. Or you're sitting in a chair where you can look at the bird feeder. I've had plenty of clients over the years enjoy just looking at the bird feeder or watching the breeze move the limbs of the tree or the flowers. I don't want to discount how important relaxation and grounding and just letting go of some of the stress can be. What are some subtle signs of aphasia stress in spouses? Feeling overwhelmed, feeling like they're always rushing. They got to get this done. They got to get that done. And if you interrupt them or get in the way or cause something to fall off in their calendar, on their schedule, or whatever their anticipation is of getting done, and they snap, that is an absolute sign of aphasia stress. The emotional exhaustion. If they sit on the couch at night with you and they fall asleep right away, that can be a sign of aphasia stress. Changes in behavior, being more impatient, quick to anger, short temper in situations that normally would not cause a reaction. The other thing you need to watch for, folks who have aphasia, you need to watch your significant other. If they are not taking care of themselves, that is a sign of aphasia stress. If they're skipping meals, if they're not sleeping, if they're not taking care of their hair or their nails, or, you know, changing their clothes every day, if they're declining coffee trips with their friends, or they don't want to talk to their friends on the phone. You, even though you have aphasia, you can be observant and notice these things and start the conversation. So solutions for spouses. You have to schedule some time. Time, right? Right when I'm suggesting to you to schedule time, when you already feel like you don't have time. Call up someone to get help. If you can afford it, hire someone to come in for a couple of hours to clean the house, to do some yard maintenance, to do things that maybe irritate you or you don't want to do. Figure out a way to delegate those tasks onto someone else, or just let them go. Pick priorities. Figure out which hills you want to stand on and which hills you don't want to die on. So you have to kind of take a step back and look objectively on what is it your responsibilities are, what absolutely has to be done versus wants to be done. And sometimes that's a very fine line. Sometimes we feel like things just have to be a certain way. The laundry, we can't let more than two shirts or two pieces of clothing pile up in the laundry hamper without us doing a load of laundry. A long time ago, I remember talking to a spouse. Her identity was keeping the laundry done. It was incredibly important to her. She would not let two or three pieces of clothing build up in the hamper before she would wash them, dry them, fold them, and put them away. It was a really challenging task to get her to realize that was her putting her own thoughts, energy into something that didn't matter. If she just allowed the clothes to pile up a few days, not that they were at risk of falling, you know, not having clothes or clean clothes to wear, just let it pile up and then do it all at once and then be done with it. Try and release some of these preconceived notions. Easier said than done, but it's still worth trying to have the conversation to give perspective, because sometimes what we put on ourselves is what is causing the stress. So I want to just pivot one more time and talk about how could a speech pathologist in the context of a treatment session notice aphasia stress? For me, I'm in telepractice. I'm online every day. And so I only get to see, just like you're seeing of me, you know, from like mid chest height to the top of my head. So what can we glean by looking at someone with just that kind of limited view? I watch body language. I look at posture. I look at facial expression. I pay attention to the muscles in their face. Are they smiling? Are they frowning? Did they get just this frowny face suddenly? Are they now not making eye contact with me and looking away? Are they sitting back and crossing their arms? That means they're disengaging. Are they leaning forward and really into it? What is it that their body language, their tone of voice, their facial expression, their eye contact, what does that tell me? Because it's these subtle signs that I pay attention to judge whether the task I'm doing with them is too warm, too hot. Think of the Goldilocks and the Three Bears, right? Is it too hot? Is it too cold? Or is the task just right? It's very important for a clinician to pay attention to these subtleties. And spouses and significant others can do the same. Sometimes we just have to stop and pause for a second and think about what we're seeing and what it means, and then make adjustments in how we're communicating, or the environment or the context, those kinds of things. So we're going to wind up this episode. We've covered Dr. Manning's work, where she really dug into the emotional and psychological stress of 14 couples living with aphasia. And then I've given you a couple of client, very tangible examples, and told you how can we, as not the person with aphasia, how can we notice when there's aphasia stress? So let's talk about what you do if you're the significant other and you perceive aphasia stress. Number one, acknowledge it. Sometimes touch, putting your hand on their shoulder, grabbing their hand. If you're sitting down, hand on their leg, whatever the case may be. You putting your calming energy on that person with aphasia. Breathing. For you, the significant other, as well as the person with aphasia, acknowledge the frustration. Try and shift the topic, shift the situation. And if it's really not working, say at that moment, let's come back to it. But make sure that you do come back to it down the road when the emotions are not flared up, exacerbated. In our podcast series, I had this episode about Godzilla brain, because when emotion takes over for anyone, it is much more difficult to convey what you're thinking and what you're feeling. You turn into a reptile. That's why I call it Godzilla brain. You turn into a reptile where you are just looking to survive. It's fight or flight. It's, you know, you're trying to survive that immediate situation. And it's harder to have the introspection, the evaluation, the different ways of expressing yourself at that moment. Does that make sense? We don't want Godzilla brain. We want to keep our higher cortex, our human brain, working so that we can express ourselves. So recognizing aphasia stress, acknowledging it, making adaptations, breathing is so important for families living with aphasia. Aphasia stress is real. Notice it, acknowledge it, and then do something about it. These strategies that we've talked about today might seem obvious, but when you're in the moment, they may not. It takes effort to take a step back and detach from emotions once they've been triggered, right? Before you can apply strategies. But understanding the subtle signs of aphasia-related stress and embracing practical strategies for effective communication and emotional support, we can begin to navigate these challenges with empathy and patience. As we wrap up today's episode, I want to leave you with a valuable resource that can help give you some additional insight on your journey with aphasia. I have a free download. It's called 5 Things You Need to Know About Aphasia. And the idea is to give you a different perspective about aphasia and empower you and your loved ones with critical insights and supports. You can get your copy today by going to my website, dolifespeechpathology.com/5. That's the number 5, the numeral 5. And if not, if you don't remember that, go to the website. The link will be in the show notes. It's on the bottom of the homepage. Download this and then let me know what you think of it. Does it give you some new insights? Does it give you a new perspective? Or do you think it's a bunch of hogwash? Give me your feedback. I want to hear it. Download your copy, 5 Things You Need to Know About Aphasia. Thank you, as always, my listeners, for being here. I wish you an amazing week, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Listen for Life podcast. We hope you feel empowered and supported. Head over to listenforlifepodcast.com to see the show notes with links and information from today's episode. Do you have a topic, a resource to share, or a guest recommendation? Inquiring minds want to know. Let us know in the comments section. Wishing you a fabulous week.